Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at the website, stevebick.com. Midweek, plenty to do. A lot of the Wednesday features that everybody looks forward to, like Seth Barrow, Sid Fernando, Dick Fowle, and some other surprises. You can count on the internet for surprises on a daily basis. Horsey Twitter. It's a pip. Yeah. I was joking with Kevin Kirstein a little bit ago. KK is going to join us. Horse Racing KK. Got ourselves the third pool in the future wager. And this is what you want to do with a future wager. This will be a good weekend. You just got the Sam Davis, and you got horses that are starting to pretty clear at this point, it seems. The field you're going to see for the Risen Star. And getting out ahead of this and anticipating horses that are out of sight, out of mind. This is where you can do okay. This is a good pool. Next month we got the Phillies, too. I've cashed two Oaks tickets. And by the way, on the future wager ticket, I don't know if I can find this. Ugh, I should have saved it. I should have used the bookmark feature on the Twit to save a... I bet you it's from when the Bengals, I bet you it's from last Sunday. Somebody responded, came back. They're sitting on a mammoth Bengals Super Bowl win future wager, $100 wager, and I want to say he got 120-1. That's what you want in these future wagers. This is the big idea, you know, kind of look around the corner, bet a little, win a lot, right? I mean, to give you an example, I didn't expect to go in this direction immediately, but because there's a few other things. The sale, we got day two, back end of the sale. They had a very good day yesterday, and no reason to think that this second day won't be good, too. The supplements are on day two. But the short yearling market, both markets, I'll get to that in a minute. But just as a seed planter, and I'll discuss it more with KK, see what his thoughts are. But for instance, Epicenter is not going to be a big price, but Epicenter runs next week in the Risen Star. Papa Cap, Epicenter's 15-1 in this wager's morning line, as is Papa Cap, but that's not who we want. Zandon, there you go. You got Chad with that upstart colt, got nipped by Mo Donegal in the Remsen, and he's coming back next week in the Risen Star. That's the kind of horse. He's 30-1. That's what you're looking for. You're trying to find and think ahead to somebody that is under the radar right now. In due time, the allowance winner from Friday, Kelly Breen, 30-1. That Happy Boy Rocket just broke his maiden, actually. 50-1 for Mott and Frank Fletcher. Those are the ideas. That's what you want to think on for when it comes to the future wager. So we'll talk with KK and see what he's got to say about the decision making. They seems like they did a nice job in this with this pool, and the individual prices that are aside from the all others 5-2, but Smile Happy and White of Barrio instantly 8-1 off of the Holy Bull win. And if you didn't see, I sent it out last night when Jay, as soon as Jay posted it, actually, Jay Pribman's terrific recaps. And Jay graded out the Holy Bull well. We'll see what Sid thinks. We'll talk pedigree in a little bit with Sid. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. We'll talk about, I'm sure, Gunrunner a little bit with early voting. Let's see. Early voting in this is 12-1. That's, you know, it seems low. I think you want him to float up if you're, you know, even off the Withers win. We'll talk, have to talk Messier as well with that Bob Lewis win. And of course, no Baffert horses included in the future wager. But you got to keep tabs. And he took a nice step forward. Boy, watch that again yesterday. You know, speaking of watching again at Santa Anita, I watched that DQ again. I understand why everybody's miffed that couldn't get it. Other than Van Dyke, I'm going to make sure Tony sees it for tomorrow and see what Tony thinks. But I the waving of that stick by Van Dyke, you know, you wave a stick like that in front of an oncoming horse. You know, they shy. I think they're. I did hear who was it that responded yesterday on Twitter or Monday after the show and said it was yesterday because they were listening to the replay. And they said, "I'm part of the 5%." They put up their hands that I benefited from the DQ. So it's an odd circumstance. I didn't conclude any more than I did when I watched it on Saturday and Sunday. I didn't other than the stick. I watch Van Dyke's arm. He's waving that stick in front of the oncoming Johnny and the favorite there. Dick Powell after Kevin this morning. Trey Styles. As promised, Trey was funny. When I reached out to schedule him for today, he said, I was listening to the show yesterday, and you mentioned that I was going to be on, so I was waiting to hear when I was going to be. So either 10:30 or 11 in that range. There's a very good sequence. I was sort of looking for maybe a double to play around with at Sam Houston, and the 6th and 7th, you have 11 horses and 9 horses. You got 4 and ups going 7/8, first level allowance in the 6th. And then you've got fillies, 3-year-olds, going 3/4 as the 7th, a conditional allowance. Where I think there's a horse that really looks, I mean, if Texas Ascot Queen, if she runs back to that last race with Luzzy for J.R. Caldwell. If she runs back to that, I don't see her, you know, being beaten. So maybe you can tiptoe. But anyway, in terms of the multis, I ended up printing out races 5-9. It's a very good sequence. There's a maiden, open maiden group that starts the pick 5, going 7/8. 3-year-olds. There's Texas Bred Maiden Special going a mile on the turf, and then there's a mile nickel claimer non-winners of 3 lifetime that is really well matched. Very tough nightcap. So this is a pick 5, pick 4 at Sam Houston, and of course a week early with the Wednesday cards. So we wanted to make sure everybody was on board, and we'll see if Trey if Trey, like an assassin, like the shooter with from from half a mile away, like he did a few weeks ago. We'll see if he's got one special play or if he's got multiple thoughts. So, Sam Houston, action. Seth, I'm sure, will look at Tampa. And there's actually a good allowance feature at Tampa today. So we'll see what he's got. And I know Gus, I saw that this morning at Derby Trail, Gus was doing the Gulfstream pick five. So we'll have opinions today for three of the Wednesday venues, Sam Houston, Gulfstream, and Tampa, to get us into the Wednesday action. All right. And Seth and I reached out. I'll slip this in. Because I don't know yet if I reached out to Chris Larmy from the Players Committee with the NHC. You obviously saw the back half of the situation involving Jonathan Kinchin and the NHC, and sort of as anticipated, NHC suspended Jonathan from play for 2 years over the attempt to play from outside the, not just outside the hotel, but from outside the state, from actually across the country, from Gulfstream. So this basically was a penalty recommended by the Players Committee, and so I think Chris Larmy will likely join us, and Chris can talk about the way in which they approached it and the whys and wherefores. And Trey, I don't want Trey to put Trey in a switch, but he's been playing. He in fact received a recognition for his 20th year making the NHC. I mean, Trey Stiles, a legend on the contest circuit, and there's no shortage of conversation about the team approach and people partnering and the discussion, of course, people about beards and about spouses and there's that kind of discussion that this has generated. And in regards to why the NHC, why the press release, both the one on Monday after the contest ended, a week ago Monday, and this one yesterday, not specifically naming Jonathan, their feeling is it takes away from, first of all, on Monday, the day after the contest, they didn't want anything taking the attention away from David Harrison. David's going to be on with us tomorrow, actually. And then in this follow-up yesterday, again, there's 35,000 people that participate in the contests, in the qualifiers, and whittling down to the 550 or so that make it to Vegas. And so I asked Keith, what, how come you didn't want to? They said because it's the rule and the circumstance that's being addressed. And he said everyone knows that it's Jonathan, and it's just too bad. It's such a poor choice on his part, and I think the reason, I'm not going to put words in Trey's mouth or anybody's, but the thing that is most sort of deflating about it is that the idea, the suggestion that Jonathan wouldn't know the rules involved is just, you know, it's just preposterous. And the fact that this contest is really what brought, you know, Jonathan into the spotlight, and to have such a cavalier and really selfish approach to what went on was really just as poor a set of choices that anybody would possibly make. The whole thing seemed to be, you could see it sort of evolving Saturday into Sunday, and the way in which people became aware of it, you just didn't believe it. It was like, what? Why? It didn't make any sense. Jonathan, if he wants to come on and talk about it, I imagine his preference is to just, go forward and try to apologize, and I hope he understands why it was so inappropriate and really an insult to everybody that participates in the format as it's constructed. That's what was so, I think, upsetting. If people are, the people, and then a lot of people, people take this seriously, and as they should, that I think is why it provoked the reaction it's provoked. Well, we'll see what Trey says and see what Chris has to say. Let's get KK in here and get going on this, and we'll talk about see what else is on Kevin's agenda. And let me, okay, if you don't have, I'll give you this. You got that? Here. Yeah, here you go. Boom, you're done. Got it. That was really nice. At the end, I was listening in to the replay, actually. Depends on what time I sit down up here and start to work. And I was delighted. I haven't had D-Wayne on in way, way too long. So it was really nice. And I think I heard from Hammer minutes after the show ended. I think they were hopeful that Ethereal Road might participate in the Rebel. But Hammer said, I think he made the decision right then on the fly. He said they knew he'd been entertaining running Ethereal Road. He said, but Hammer was listening in, so he said it sounded like he made the decision right when you asked him. It was kind of funny. So, and a couple of other people, well, you heard Nick Zito at the beginning of the show say how serious that Philly is. Secret oath, and certainly next month in March, first week in March or so, when they do the Oaks, future, she will be prominent. And Kevin Kirstein at Churchill can probably confirm that. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, we had Wayne make that decision yesterday on the air. I guess that he's going to run Ethereal Road in the Rebel, but the Philly Secret Oath. And next month we'll be looking forward. The Oaks Pool is my favorite pool, I think. Plus, you can bet the Oaks Derby double, but Pool 3, and looks like there might be some bargains.
Yeah, there certainly looks to be. You know, it's sort of then you have some horses that have made their three-year-old debuts already, or horses that have maybe broken their maiden, come back and won first-level allowances, so they have that promise of, you know, showing up on the Championship Series on the road to the Kentucky Derby, which starts in a week from Saturday at Fairgrounds with the Risen Star. And, you know, it's funny, you mentioned Secret Oath, and, you know, when we sit down with our Future Wager committee and we look at past performances of, you know, a number of horses to, you know, throw onto the pool, I threw her name in there just to see how she shaped up. And I'll tell you what, she shapes up some as good as some of the boys in there. So, yeah, this field is very wide open, like you said. I think there's some bargains to be had and some horses that are flying under the radar a little bit at this stage.
The idea here, I was trying to frame this in advance of you visiting. The opportunity is to go look at the horses that are either just coming back or the emergent types like Kelly Breen with that In Due Time that, you know, pretty much upset, you know, horses in that allowance on Friday at Gulfstream, you know, that everybody had their eyes on, you know, on the Pletchers. And here comes Kelly, and, you know, that horse is 30-1 In Due Time.
Yeah, you know, that was sort of interesting because, you know, everyone, like you said, was paying attention to the Pletcher and were paying attention to the Pletcher horse the day before out in the pools in Vegas, who got hammered at, I think he was 250-1 when some large wagers came in on that horse. And then In Due Time comes up, wins by five lengths, and really jumps onto the road to the Derby scene after that victory. And so I'm sure we'll see him down in the Florida area for their races down there for the last couple that they have. And so, yeah, he's 30-1, and it'll be interesting how that sort of plays paramutually. It sort of seems like the horses that are the now horses get bet a little more than the horses that may be, you know, pointing towards a later race on the road to the Derby. And we saw that sort of in the last pool. You know, White Abario, for instance, was 171-1 last time out and wins last weekend the Holy Bull at 6-1, and, you know, will probably be, you know, 10-1 or so in this pool. So it's sort of, you have to see how they play paramutually over the next, you know, the opening days of this pool, and, you know, closes Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern. So you have those couple of days on Friday and Saturday just to see how the wagering goes early to see what the actual value is.
You know, and I'm just looking at I just pulled out the In Due Time chart and PPs, and I could even bring this horse up with Sid next or at the top of the hour. This is a Florida family because I see that the Dam, who was unraced, she's by Curlin, so there's no shortage of stamina potential in Sweet Sweet Annie. Gary and Mary West and Sid will be, I'm going to imagine, very familiar with this pedigree, given his work with the Wests, and not this time. And the Dam happens to be a half-sister to Successful Song, who was a very, very good, tough Florida mare that graded stake, I think just graded stake placed. I don't think she ever won a graded stake, but she won plenty of things like, you know, the Sunshine Millions type events. So In Due Time, very interesting. And, you know, the not this time portion of this, the Gun Runners, you know, we're watching certain stallions who's, you know, are in their formative stage.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, you saw that in the first pull back in November with that Sire Future Wager. And, you know, I think there are a lot of smart bettors out there that sort of, you know, honed in on those sires that are, you know, sort of priming for, you know, the early successes like the Not This Times, like the Gun Runners. And, you know, we've been sort of sitting on the edge of our seats waiting to see how these Gun Runners would do as a three-year-old. We saw what they've done as two-year-olds, and, you know, seeing them turn three and seeing how they stretch out into the longer distances, I think there's a lot of us that are eagerly awaiting to see how they do.
You know, it'd be interesting to see what a horse like Mo Donegal, what direction he goes. 30-1 on Battaglia's morning line, and Certainly, if you read Jay Priveman's recap that he did last night of the Holy Bull, he talked about, you know, Mo Donegal, who seems to have a tendency to kind of run in spots, and that it was not as, there might be a little bit of a dirtied up, you know, beat from Saturday. And Pletcher, I know, told, I saw Bill Finley had a Pletcher, you know, next stop piece in today's TDN, and he talked to Todd, and Todd laid out where he was going with the top, you know, Pletcher camp three-year-olds, and Mo Donegal probably headed back to Aqueduct for the wood, which you can understand given his Remsen success. And even Simplification, who had a nightmare voyage, didn't start well and was taken out of his typical game, you know, kind of being with the pace. He's 30-1, and that's a dirtied up number.
Yeah, you know, Simplification, who I think there's going to be a lot of people waiting to see what this horse does in the Fountain of Youth, because he did, you know, have some, you know, two-turn distance questions. He obviously was impressive winning the Mucho Macho Man at a mile, and so, you know, you're always sort of waiting to see what the horses out of that Mucho Macho Man do as the distances get longer, and we really didn't get to see that in the Holy Bull just because of his start, and so I think this horse is very intriguing, and we had him in the last pull just because of that same reason. He was very intriguing in the Mucho Macho Man, and, you know, you just simply have to draw a line through his Holy Bull, and just because of that start. And so it'll be very interesting how he does next time out down there in Florida for Antonio Seno. I think he's a very intriguing prospect. Again, a son of Not This Time, who we've seen, you know, scattered throughout these Triple Crown nominees, a Florida bred too. So I think there's some value to be had on him. He's 30-1, like you said. And another thing with the value too, you may not see it in the win pool, but you will see it in that exacta pool. And so keep an eye on those exacta will pays if you like a couple of horses, because I think that's where you can make a lot of money in these future wager pools.
Let's quickly run down this group. Barber Road for John Ortiz, who will be looking toward the Rebel, and 20-1. That might be, he might be a number. These are the kinds of horses that, you know, I think you want to track into Sunday evening.
Yeah, absolutely. Barber Road came running last time in that Southwest Stakes to finish second to Newgrange, and really was storming home well down the center of the track for John Ortiz, who's a young up-and-coming trainer here in Kentucky and has been doing very well as of late down at Oaklawn. I think his horses are really rounding into form at this stage, so keep an eye on that at the regular day at Oaklawn as well as Barber Road next time out.
Call me. Midnight 20-1 for DeSormo, who apparently is going to keep him on the side, going to bypass the Risen Star in favor of the Louisiana Derby, 20-1. Chasing Time for Asmussen, 15-1. Classic Causeway, waiting for his return, 50-1. That's a big number. Command Performance, 50-1 for Pletcher. He's kind of out of sight, out of mind too. You do have Sam Davis though on Saturday. He'll draw today. Early Voting off the win, 12-1. Any thoughts in that group?
You know, the speed figures, I think, you know, speak a little volume for Early Voting of what people saw. Visually, it was impressive, but didn't come back as fast. If you're looking at Fire speed figures, Brisnet, he earned a 91 speed rating. So, you know, sort of intriguing on what Early Voting would do. A little bit short for me. And, you know, Classic Causeway, who has been out of sight, out of mind, like you mentioned on a couple of these, who didn't take any action last pool, but, again, in the Sam Davis, which draws today, and, you know, wait and see what he does on Saturday to before you maybe place your wagers on him. But he's a horse that's been very intriguing. I liked him when he was in Kentucky, one of two sons of Giants Causeway who are Derby contenders.
Well, and in fact, a quick rundown. Other runners beside Classic Causeway for Saturday anticipated. Marty McGee on site at Oldsmar. Howling Time shows up in here, 50-1 on the Battaglia line, but obviously his performance for Dale will send that number in one direction or the other. How about Trademark in this spot as well? Ship-sational, Little Vic, Kitten Mischief. And Cassie's got both Golden Glider, who is a horse we talked about last year, and Volcanic. Apparently there's a few Hazarai that might fill out the gate.
Yeah, the interesting thing for Cassie is I talked to him yesterday because we put God of Love in this field, and You know, I think it's God of Love is going in this spot. I'm not sure what Golden Glider is doing or Volcanic, but Cassie confirmed to me yesterday morning that God of Love is going into Sam Davis. We'll see if he runs a second one or a third one in this race as well. So,
oh, nice. 50-1. Well, so you're going to that again. That price, you know, the problem you get here is the ones that run on the weekend. They, you know, their number is determined by what transpires on Saturday. So, to me, you want to be looking for, you know, for the ones that, you know, that are really not on the radar. Emmanuel 10-1 for Pletcher. Epicenter, I mentioned earlier. We'll see him in the Risen Star Forbidden Kingdom. Mandela was with us the other day, and he talked about, you know, he's going to stretch him out in the San Felipe and see what he's got. 10-1 seems a little aggressive. God of Love, you just talked about. Happy Boy Rocket, the maiden winner for Mott last weekend. Howling Time, as noted. In Due Time, and again, this is the kind of horse that I always am interested in, you know, that, you know, isn't a stake, you know, hasn't made the stake splash as of yet. Major General for Pletcher, who I think Finley said, what did Finley write this morning, that they're just getting going with him, I think.
Yeah, he was sort of maybe a little bit late on the comeback trail, but he's did show a bullet on Feb 5, going 1:03, and so I think he's getting close.
Nice. Make It Big for Sappy Joseph. Mo Donegal, we touched on. Papa Cap this weekend, or next weekend, I should say, in the Risen Star. Rattle and Roll, who is working, right? And I don't think McPeak picked out a spot yet for him?
I think he's aiming towards the Tampa Bay Derby. I think he's, you know, he was a couple of weeks behind his other three-year-olds coming back this year, and so I think the Tampa Bay Derby is the option right now for Rattle and Roll, but that could change, obviously, if, you know, there's a hiccup in his training or if he's training well, but I think keep an eye on the Tampa Derby for him.
Very good. Simplification we just talked about. You might take advantage here after what some people might perceive as a disappointment. A Slow Down Andy for Doug O'Neill, 20-1. Smile Happy and White Abario, the two individual favorites. And then Zandon, who is an ideal candidate here because we're not going to see his three-year-old debut till next Saturday.
Yeah, this is the Risen Star, as we've talked about, with a lot of these horses that are in this field shaping up to really throw down next Saturday. And so, you know, the fourth pull will probably change a little bit just because of, you know, so many of these three-year-olds that we see right now that, you know, have shown some promise are going to, you know, face off against one another. And then you'll have Call Me Midnight waiting on the sidelines who's going to wait it out until the Louisiana Derby. But there's a lot of them in this pool that'll show up next weekend in the first championship series race on the road to the Derby.
Excellent. All right. Pool opens on Friday, closes 6 on Sunday, and I guess, let's see, what time's kickoff? What time's, six, like, usually like 6:20, right, the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think it's 6:20 or 6:30 with the insufferable Cincinnati Bengals fans here in Louisville who I didn't even know.
Whoa. Easy.
Look, we're so used to, I'm so used to, you know, being from Philly and, you know, there's your team, you know, you're in your state. And I guess, you know, you have to sort of find a team when you're in Kentucky, whether it be the Colts or the Bengals or the Titans or whoever else they want to name. But yeah, we'll see a lot of, I think, Louisville, Cincinnati Bengals love on Super Bowl Sunday.
Having lived in Cincinnati, and and certainly no one who listens to us, KK, you and me and Johnny and any Eagle fan that comes through these gates, they know that we're Eagle. But when it comes to this, when you have to side somewhere, holy cow, we're absolutely siding with the Bengals. Come on, you gotta. And so is anybody that grew up in Kentucky. I mean, there was no Indianapolis Colts or no Nashville, no Tennessee Titans. I mean, That was Baltimore and Houston. They're all Bengal fans.
Yeah, apparently. I learned that my wife's a Bengals fan, too, last week. I had no idea. So learning something new every day, but it'll be I think there's a lot of Bengals fans who are, you know, in the older generation. I don't want to say older, but my age, you know, between 30 and 40 years old that are very much waiting to see this team hopefully come out on top on Sunday. And we'll see. They got a tall task ahead of them, I think.
You betting it all? You got a push? You got anything? Any opinion?
I think the line is pretty, you know, spot on. It's a tough game, I think, to take because I think they're two pretty well matched teams. But I think LA, I think, is going to have a little bit more composure than I think the Bengals will. It'll all depend on how LA does with Cincinnati's defense. But I'm willing to take the home team per se in LA and. But I won't be able to say that at the Super Bowl party I'm going to. I'll have to keep my mouth shut and root for the Bengals.
That's funny. The line, I don't know if anybody, depending on who you follow along the, you know, the sports action front, but Johnny Avello had a series of notes either yesterday or Monday, and he says that line is locked in at this point. And Johnny D gave it was very good with stats, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow and Friday to start getting some firm opinions and maybe some prop ideas. Johnny has listen to these two trends for a second. The Super Bowl team with the lowest win percentage is 13-1 against the spread since 2004. How about that?
That's quite a stat.
It's unbelievable, actually, and obviously favors the Bengals. But on the other side, for those that are jumping on and jumped on the Rams, in the last 13 Super Bowls, the team with the earliest line move in their favor is 11-1-1 against the spread. The line opened essentially at 4 and went to 4.5 and is locked in at 4.5. So there's two reasons to believe on either side.
I like that. And the prop bets that you were speaking of, I'm very interested to see with this halftime show because there's a lot of prop bets out there on this halftime show that apparently all the kids are raving about with a couple of these rap artists that I really don't know much about, even though they're popular during my time. But I think there's some, you know, there's some sources that you can go to try and find set lists for these people. So I'm trying to dig into that.
Well, you know, as Philadelphia faithful, we're only interested in Meek Mills. So that's
ain't that the truth,
right? Well, KK, great to catch up and enjoy. We'll be watching this. Nice that everybody, in preparation for kickoff, you can get your pool 3 wagers in, and we'll be watching. I'll be traveling to New Orleans, actually. So,
I'm heading down there tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah, heading down there tomorrow through Saturday night, and then come back.
Oh wow! So we really will miss you. All right. There's been a few people had suggested they were heading that direction, and then backed off for one reason or another. But wow, that's too bad. That'd be fun actually to catch up with you someplace out and about.
You'll get to hang out with TwinSpires.com Scott Shapiro. He's really revved up to go down there, so you'll be able to hang out with Shap.
Oh, is he spending the week?
Yeah, he's. I think he goes down there midweek for the Risen Stars.
Nice. Well, yeah. We're going to have some fun conversations because John Dooley is going to sit down with us during the week. I was in conversation with Joe Christofek yesterday as well. Joe, and we'll have the great McGoey will join us, and we'll have a, I think Marcus is going to be on hand. It should be one of my favorite trips. And I've missed the last, I can't remember now if it, I got to look this up. I know we didn't go last year or the year before. So I was getting ready. I was literally getting ready. That's right. I was literally getting ready to go to New Orleans when, you know, when everything got pulled up. So in mid-March, yeah, I was getting ready to go down.
Time flies. I'm glad, yeah. Glad we can make trips again.
Kevin Kirstein, everybody. Horse Racing KK at the Downs. Kev, I appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely, and best of luck on your Super Bowl bets this weekend.
I'm still formulating prop ideas, and I'll do a prop. Everybody, I'll do a prop contest. That we've done that the last couple of years. People love that. We'll come up with like 12 props and for prizes. This has been become a popular contest, some memorabilia type stuff. Thanks, KK.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Dick Powell joining us, I think. Dick? No? Case? We've got, in anticipation of Dick, I'll give you what's going on. We're about 7 minutes to the Victoria Park handicap at Happy Valley. And you got a heavy favorite. Gortis for Derek Lung and 7-5 in here. That's the three. World famous on the outside. 12-6-1, 7-1 for Helene Wisdom Star. And the only other single, yeah, two horses hanging around 9-1. Total power, the 8 is 9-1, and Invincible Missile for Casper Founds and Harry Bentley. So those are your favorites, and then it pretty much careens up into the teens and above. And Dick Powell, good morning,
Steve. Yes, race 9. Kind of a, I wouldn't say wild morning, but Zach Purton is just tearing it up. He had 5 winners on Sunday at Happy Valley with that special card. And then he's had 4 of the first 8 races today. So who does he have here? He has... Boy, am I missing that? Oh, he's on the 4, Helene Wisdom Star. Now, I'm going to try to beat the favorite. Garitis won last time out on January 19th at Happy Valley, going this distance against Class 3. Now, he picks up 7 pounds. All right, you win, you pick up weight. Draws okay, middle of the pack. Last 2 races, he's been way, way back. And that seems to have suited him better than stalking the pace like he had been doing at Chatin. So we'll see what Derek Lung's tactics are. But I like the 4 here, Helene Wisdom Star with Zach Purton, the red-hot Zach Purton. Blinkers off, draws inside, was in the race with Garitis. Now, that race had a very slow pace. And Helene Wisdom Star was one of the victims of that, just grinding along, got within less than 3 lengths in the deep stretch, had traffic problems, just couldn't get it done that day. Well, now we come back, draws inside. This is a horse who's been dropping down, had been running in a higher class, dropped down to Class 3 last time out. Now I think this is the go move. So I'm going to go to 4. Helene Wisdom Star, and then I'm going to play Exactas with the 3, Garitis, the favorite, and the 11, Red Majesty, who's going to have to overcome post-11, but it's going to be interesting when we watch this race, Steve. Caris Teton's going to have the pedal down coming out of the gate. And he has more than enough speed to make the lead from post 11 in this two-turn race. So even though he draws poorly, he does have just lots of natural speed. So we'll see how much energy he has to use to get over. But I'll go with a little bit of a price here with the four, Helene Wisdom Star.
Well, and I'm just pulling up form to win. I don't know if last night I retweeted Papo. He'll be on with us Friday. We've been kind of treading water, waiting for this redesign of form to win, and it's going to be even easier to use and to see. And I'm just looking, setting the distance from 1600 to 1650, and Helene Wisdom Star, part of the analysis here, the form to win sees him fourth. Form to win is kind of giving in a little bit to Gorifas, the favorite, is acknowledging both. You know what? On average, the favorite has been consistent and scores well. However, Helene Wisdom Star has the best rating, the best speed rating of any individual performance between 1600 and 1650. So there is some support for Helene Wisdom Star from that standpoint. Also some interest in the 7, who's a monster price. Game Player Times and the 10 as well, Scarlet Ibis, that this is on average, but of course being a part of that is the weights, and I didn't make a weight adjustment request. That is something that is one of the tools that you can fine tune. But just on, in this 1600 to 1650 range, I think you're onto something here, and you get the red hot Zach Burton.
Well, and if you go two back, he had been off for about 9 weeks. He came back at Happy Valley in a sprint, and he ran into Kirpany. Now, Kirpany came back and just crushed all weather horses last time out. So Kirpany's in big form. That was just a necessary race, stretched out, does have back form at Happy Valley. These are the type horses that at a price you can make arguments for. Gritus, if he runs that race that he ran, actually, if he runs either of his last two races, he'll be very tough. But picking up 7, these are handicap races, and weight matters. Interesting, Scarlet Ibis, which was a famous New York bred son of Cormorant, who was known for his, was he miserable? all these people, look at the pretty horse. There goes the finger. He was not nice.
But on that topic, Dick, for those that aren't on Twitter, I want you to be aware, because I retweeted it. It's a lovely piece. Speaking of pleasant versus unpleasant horses, there's a wonderful piece in New Yorker yesterday about Alphabet Soup.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's really nice. And I don't know anything about the writer. Her name's Susan Orlean. And she talked to Michael Blowen and to David Hoffmans and Chris McCarron. And she obviously was a fan and wrote the sweetest. I called it a post-Obit ode. It's really, really nice. It's online in New Yorker at newyorker.com. And I think you can, if you don't ever go to New Yorker, you probably can get a look at a free article, a handful. I subscribe, but I think you won't be blocked from viewing it.
Right.
It's really nice.
Now, we'll race talk, 7. tonight. Zach won with a first, was it the first time starter? Yes. And he came over on the runner up. And you know, races are adjudicated in Hong Kong. So Zach's obviously red hot. Joe got shut out on Sunday, and now Joe is serving a 6-meet suspension.
Oof.
So Zach had missed all that time with that injury on Longines Day in December. And now he's come back, and then now he's gotten his business back. He's doing good. But I'll wait for the chart comments to come out and stuff, but we'll wait and see.
You think he'll get sat down?
If there was a betting line on it, like there seems to be a betting line on everything today. Yes.
All right.
Because when you watch the head on, he moves to the rail. It was on the pan. It looked like the horse who got stopped just put himself where he shouldn't have been. And then when you see the Stewart's patrol film, they both kind of moved to the rail, and Zach kept coming over, and the horse behind him had the steady. So, we'll see. You know, they call him tight, as they should. And there's a bunch of riders suspended for today's race. Blake Shin is out.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. It seemed like there were some names missing.
Yeah, let me find it.
We do have
Blake Shin, Matthew Chadwick, Matthew Poon, Dylan Moe. They finish up today. And then Vincent Ho is out, but he comes back on the 13th, so he'll be able to ride Golden 60, who we'll talk about after this race coming up in the Hong Kong Gold Cup. But and then back Wagner Borges was out today, so yeah. lucky they're at Happy Valley where they can only run 12, or Sha Tin where they run 14. They don't have a problem.
Some guys at the end of the bench getting opportunities. Lights flashing, and looks like there's maybe two behind. They were given Scarlet Ibis a going over, it looked like, Dick, that slowed. So we're just about set.
Gates fly, they're racing, and Invincible Missile with Sacred Ibis. They were the last two to leave the machine, and Geriders is going to end up probably a little worse than midfield. Now, world famous with everyone's delight charging forward, wider is Red Majesty, and the anomaly and game plan times kicking up to almost make a line of five into that first turn. Total Power, Amazing One Plus, and Geriders caught out on a limb three deep, but has cover on the back of the anomaly. Elaine Wisdom Star on the inside, and Canto prepared, and then came Invincible Missile, and three lengths to the last of them, who is Sacred Ibis. 27.67 the lead section, so speed at this point is good, and it is world famous taking them into the back. Second to everyone's delight, a little awkward for a few strides into that 1,000 metre turn, and Red Majesty's covered a fair bit of ground in the early stages, gets to the one-off position now second. Game player times travelling keenly. The anomaly now posted three deep and improving. Geritis on the three wide, train Total Power on the rail. A length to Amazing One Plus, followed there by Encanto Prepared, Elaine Wisdom Star, two lengths Invincible Missile, and Sacred Ibis being clicked up at the back. Off the back straight they run, 450 to go. World famous Red Majesty, they're the top two. Everyone's delight, the anomalies covered ground, Total Power, game player times on retreat. Geritis gets to the outside with Amazing One Plus, and Elaine Wisdom Star towards the inside. World famous coming to the 200 metres has been reeled in here by Everyone's Delight. Total Power up the inside, Amazing One Plus, Invincible Missile. Everyone's Delight, Invincible Missile. He's charging late over the top, and Invincible Missile pulls off the win in the last. Invincible Missile for Harry Bentley has scored and scored well on Everyone's Delight, and Total Power closing well. Amazing One Plus wasn't far away. World famous Sacred Ibis Lake, the anomaly game player times Geritis never never really yelped. Red Majesty wide and Kanto prepared, and Helene Wisdom Star, one of the last to pull up.
Well, boy, Dick, they turned for home, and you had literally, you must have had nine horses within a length or two of the lead. I've never seen them fan out that wide.
Yeah, I think I ran last, second last, and fourth last. So,
well, this thing kept changing, basically just kept kind of morphing. You had... especially, you know, once they reached the, you know, the top of the straight, Invincible Missile with Harry Bentley for Casper Founds, and 10-1, Invincible Missile, a Smart Missile 7-year-old gelding, and the two I saw was second, 6-2-8-1 is how they crossed the wire. I couldn't see who was third and fourth. Everyone's Delight, Alexis Bedell for Frankie Lohr, 9-1. So this is going to be. This is going to be very productive, and that you know that Total Power ran very well, 6-1. Probably ran the most complete race, you know, in terms of you know being involved and trying to finish. So 6-2-8-1. The one was amazing. 1+11-1. This is going to be a very nice nightcap tote.
Harry Bentley had a $167 winner on Sunday in race 8 at Happy Valley. And I don't know if it was the Hong Kong press office or the South China Morning Post had a story about him. And he's doing better and better. And I remember him as an apprentice rider in Dubai, but he didn't have many mounts at the big meet. It was always at Sharjah or Abu Dhabi and the other tracks, the domestic tracks. And, you know, we saw it as Harry Bentley, and I guess he was pretty young because he's only...
He's 30.
30.
Yeah, he's like 30. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good, solid rider. And
I like him.
Well, he's when I did that piece on the Jockey ROI, yeah, and some of it gets skewed. Obviously, he had $167 winner. Yeah, his ROI is good, but you know, he's very, very legitimate. As are all the riders. It's just what kind of book of rides they're going to get. And I give an example. We've talked for years now about Matthew Poon and all the long shots Matthew was brought in. Well, now Matthew has gotten to the point where he's riding so well. He's winning with favorites. He's winning. He has this one horse who's won its first two career starts. I mean, that could be a serious horse for him, you know. And so it's not just, you know, lightweight type horses that go off at long odds. Some of these riders can make the lighter weight. So that's a big advantage for them. Like in this race, he has 124. But like if you go down the list, when you get down to 116, then you're seeing, you know, there's only half the riders that can make that weight. I mean, Zach Purton, I don't think Zach can get under 120. Joe Marrera can. So the business kind of gets flipped upside down with the riders that can make lightweight. But then the reason why the horse is in lightweight is it's lightly rated and doesn't have the firepower that the high weights have. So it's just Harry just continues to get better and better, and you know we kind of need someone to take up that number three position behind Joe and Zach, because the gap between Joe and Zach has gotten bigger than ever. I mean, Karis Teton is third leading rider, but he's far, far back. You know, Vincent Hull got, you know, he has Golden 60, does a good job, but you know, just 29 winners going into today, so somebody will surge forward. And we'll see who it is.
He came to North America for Breeders' Cup, and I remember the horse I think ended up going favored. Horse the Lamotto, Lamotto.
Oh yeah.
He was, I think he was the regular rider on Lamotto, and I'm pretty sure went favored in that Breeders' Cup. That was at Santa Anita because Nick Luck, I just remember I had taken a shine to L'Amato and Nick liked him, I think, and he ended up favored that day. And the kid must have been 23 or 24 at that time.
I think L'Amato won the Prix de la Forêt going 7 furlongs and ran in the Breeders' Cup mile, turf mile.
I got beat. Ran okay. 2016.
Yeah.
2016. I just looked that up. He was sixth.
Okay.
And he was favored, 7-2. That was Tourist. That was Tourist. And Teppan second, Midnight Storm third, Ironicus fourth, and Miss Temple City. Boy, that was, I'll tell you what, some interesting stallions have come out of that. Tourist, Midnight Storm,
yeah,
Ironicus, Hit It a Bomb was ninth in there. Wow.
He won the year before with the juvenile turf from Post.
Yes.
Post 14.
Yep. Or the regular mile one. That's right, from the 14-hole. Look at you.
Well, they stick out because I can't play him. He's your post 14.
and the one I always think of on that front is Caracanti. That was the one that who was it? It was Nick Tamaro that I think Caracanti. That's when Nick finished third in the BCB, third or fourth in the BCBC, and on the strength of Caracanti.
And I think Lur's second Breeders' Cup mile was from post 14.
I think you're right.
I remember talking to someone after the draw. I wasn't there. And I said, I like him even more. And the guy looks at me like, what? I said, because now Mike has to go.
Forces his hand.
And it was exactly what he needed because that was Lur at his best when he was up on the engine. So, yeah.
I just pulled out. That's always a fun one for me because that was my first trip to Santa Anita. Was that 93 Breeders' Cup.
Yeah. Are they in the rotation coming up soon? I don't.
Well, we've got? We're back at Keeneland. Yeah, we're back at Keeneland this year, and then I think we go right back. Go right back to Del Mar. Is that possible?
It could very well be.
2023. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. No Santa Anita.
They have not announced 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Here's speculation from November. In the Trib about Santa Anita potentially for 2023, and then Churchill or Del Mar subsequently. But I'm glad this came up. We will reach out for comment from Drew Fleming and team.
All right. Now, we're back at Sha Tin, except it's Friday night, Saturday morning this weekend. So we're a day early. We have 10 handicap races, 8 on the turf, 2 all weather. Then the following week at Sha Tin on the 20th, that's Sunday, we have... Hong Kong Gold Cup, which has drawn Golden 60. It did not draw Waikuku, who beat Golden 60 last time out. but surprisingly has drawn a 12 horse field. So that'll be interesting. And I was watching one of the shows, and Russian Emperor, who's, you know, kind of on the border of breaking through, he's been running well, and he had a really good trial. Finished up, looked great. Doug White's the trainer. So we'll see if Russian Emperor can kind of break into the top two in the Hong Kong Gold Cup. That's at a mile and a quarter. So Golden 60 got beat going a mile. His option was to go back to 7 furlongs or stretch out to a mile and a quarter. He's won at a mile and a quarter before he won the Hong Kong Derby. So he will try the mile and a quarter, group one. And then the same day is the Queen's Silver Jubilee Cup, which is a group one, 7 furlongs, 1,400 meters. That only has 8 going. California Deep Shot, Healthy Happy, Kayak Star, Lucky Express, Mighty Giant, Sky Field, who won the Long Jeans race. I think Waikuku. Oh, Waikuku went into this race. So that's interesting. John Size and Wellington. So those 8 appointed for the 7 furlong race. So Waikuku and Golden 60 kind of go separate ways. John Size trains Waikuku. Well, last week, John Size had 6 winners. That's a lot of winners.
Wow.
And a two meet week. So he's now the leading trainer with 47. He's pulled ahead of Frankie Law, was 43. Then there's a drop back to Tony Cruz. But Tony's always well armed in the stake races. And Francis Liu has 27. And like I said, Joe is the leader with 74. Zach has 65 now after today. And I think Karras might have picked up a win today. So we got the same field sizes of state steady, average win price, $18.38. Percentage winning favorites, 31%. So racing continues to be formful in the sense that if you're going to average 12 horse fields, 31% winning favorites is pretty high. And then, but you got the average win price of $18. So when you have a winner, even if it's favorites, you're going to do pretty good.
Excellent. Thanks, Dick. Dick, in a rip from today's headlines topic, before we go, we've got a couple of minutes before we take a break and have Sid roll in. Your reaction to the latest Times Union salvos and to me, just gratuitous attack on racing in New York?
That's a great question. Great phrasing of the question. When I read it, I'm reading now. The minute I start reading it, it says, in the industry, what do they call them? In the industry piece, it's like this is what you write to win awards. You don't cover this on a regular basis. None of these issues come up on a regular basis with any of their coverage. And yet, here they come out with a 3-part piece.
Four,
okay. And it basically just had George Malan's view of the world from his perspective, for people not familiar. George Malan is the head of the testing lab in New York. He's been the head for many, many years. And obviously he has great knowledge of the testing world and everything else, but, you know, it's just his opinion and his viewpoint. So she's looking at it from the prism of his eyes. And yeah, it then becomes very gratuitous. Doesn't really break any new ground, and it's like, let's pile on.
Yeah. what I find just shocking, and people have heard me over literally over basically back to about 2007. And you and I have had conversations about the franchise debate, but here is the supposed lead newspaper in the Capital District that is a ongoing beneficiary of the largest economic driver in tourism and everything associated with it in the region. The only professional sport. I mean, there's minor league sports, there's college sports. The only major, if you don't count, I guess you wouldn't really count Lake Placid anymore. I mean, they're never going to have an Olympics again at Lake Placid. But the relentless assault on the racing industry and NYRA is just mind-boggling. It makes absolutely no sense that you've got a readership that is a beneficiary of this industry widely, and paper just it feels obliged to constantly take broadsides at the sport, and I guess because they think it's a piñata and it's easy, it's easy pickings to try to embarrass the game. The attempts to conflate any topic of the moment with New York, the thing opens with inferences about George Navarro and Seth Fishman. They had to actually make a correction, 10 minutes after the thing, went online, when they made out like George Navarro was a leading trainer in New York. No, actually. Then the insinuations of Fishman's client list that without really discussing or bringing up that it overwhelmingly involved in the harness side. The whole thing, it's just one inference and innuendo trying to associate anything that looks looks bad. Let's tie it to New York, and they're gonna come after it with aftercare, even though New York has been a leader in off the track thoroughbred placement, and NYRA and NYTHA with the work they've done to create the Second Chance program, Take 2, they'll be the usual nonsense about subsidies, bailout, all which has been completely addressed and corrected over and over again. It's just mind-boggling to me that they feel obliged to do this. And if they think they're going to get an investigative, they're going to go after Peabody's or whatever, whatever award that they're so desperate. I just don't get it.
It's a schizophrenia in the sense that the sales department does everything they can do to promote Saratoga. And they have advertising deals with NYRA, which both parties benefit from. Okay, then you have the racing side, and I can't ever remember the racing side ever covering any of these issues. Then you have the news side. And the news side decides to do certain things, many of which I supported. And I think Jim Odato, who did a lot of that work, and Jim Odato's work on the NXIVM cult,
yep,
which wound up costing him his job, I thought Jim was great. And I'll give you some inside baseball. One reason why, when things were leaked, they went to Jim, because when they were leaked to other people, they never went anywhere. And Jim was, I thought Jim was terrific at what he did. Now, if he didn't have this schizophrenia, let's say I'm working there as a, even a freelance person, whatever. I'm not going to be an employee. Maybe call me up, run this by me, you know, bounce this off me. Oh, no, this isn't correct. Well, no, I don't agree with this. Ah, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is a little weak. You know, whatever. I don't see where that process takes place. So anyone who read this, you immediately say, well, George Navarro didn't win $25 million in purses in New York. That's absurd. That's like a bogey that should stick out, flashing red hat. And so the goal is not to further the story, whatever the story is. The goal is to win awards and pat yourself on the back. Yeah. Now, now I read the Times Union on my iPad, and today I checked, and I don't see the second part yet.
No, they'll probably spread it out, you know, over a period for maximum exposure. In the meantime, other than certain people who just, you know, flog things like this that just are licking their lips in anticipation to try to humiliate and hold somebody's feet to the fire, and those that wish that they were in a position to write this kind of stuff. I think people are tired of it, and I made the point that the topic, and you bring up the lab, and in fact financing of research and testing, this is an industry-wide issue, and we know that. And if they had any interest, really real interest, as you just alluded to, Dick, if there was any real interest in furthering that discussion, you could have a very valuable and worthwhile conversation. But they're not interested in that. They're not interested. They're either serving an interest that wants to rob New York Racing of the legislated agreement, the 25-year agreement where the state received the racetracks in exchange for the franchise for 25 years. The assault on that, and that ham-handed joke, the legislator from the city that then didn't even show up to her own hearing. I mean, it was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I mean, this is just tiresome. I mean, you want to have legitimate discourse? Great. Everybody in the industry, the Canizos and Nadja Thompson and Joe Applebaum and Dave O'Rourke, the breeders, Joe McMahon and Larrey Visaggi, you want to sit down and talk about all this? Okay. Everybody would be happy to, you know, talk about real issues and solutions, but not this is just an absolute smear and a hit piece.
Yeah, it's a hit piece. There's no doubt. And reading the first installment, the limited number of voices in the story is you know,
well,
mailing, you know, it's like mailing, yeah. mailing. Like,
yeah.
All right. Well, do you have Drew Mollicker in there? Do you have people that don't think
deal
the lab's done a good job over the years? Or, you know, just it's like.
Well,
but the problem, There's no one there to tell this reporter or whoever staff people worked on it, well, you might want to look at this. You're going down that rabbit hole. You might go, you know, they just have a goal, and let's try to write stuff that fulfills that goal.
I've got to read why why I reacted the way I did to this. Let me read you one. This was one thing that I saved. Still, some experts believe those caught using the drug represent just a small fraction of people in the industry who actually use it. Okay. And who are those experts that you can't dangle statements like that. I mean, when I say misinformation and innuendo, that's what this is. Still, some experts believe those caught using the drug represent just a small fraction of people. You can't make that's just an inflammatory throwaway comment designed to make the reader think that there's just widespread abuse. That's all this is. And I'm sorry. And Casey Saylor or whatever the editor's name is, it can you know, disparage me and belittle me all he wants. But, I've been following this a little too long. I feel bad for this. Emily Munson is obviously a talented writer and very capable. They've handed her this assignment, and it's an unreasonable expectation. The whole thing to me, Dick, is just bizarre. This they've been doing it annually. I started to do the research and I stopped after about a half an hour. I started to make a list and save the links to all of the whether it was editorials or the executive pay at NYRA, every single thing you can think of, and usually timed to try to take away from the meat. I don't get it. I don't get it. You got the best economic driver in the region, and this is the service it's paid.
Have you had any back and forth with Siler? Or has he?
No, I didn't know him from Adam. None. So,
I'm not out there on Twitter, Stu, so I don't know what's really going on.
Well, come on.
The best thing in a Twitter war that I don't know about.
The best thing on Twitter yesterday was there was a big trend yesterday, which was pot roast. And now that's a trend on Twitter that I'm for. There was a big discussion about pot roast.
My mom made the best pot roast. And over here at the Ripe Tomato in Malta,
they have
Yankee pot roast. And if I order it, I insist that I want the Mets pot roast. I don't want the Yankee pot roast.
Hey now, that's bad.
I love pot roast, boy. It's not. I haven't had breakfast yet now.
We haven't been to Ripe Tomato in ages. But when there was a long period where that was a absolute regular in the rotation, the pot roast or the chicken parm was the for me was always the go-to at Ripe Tomato.
I drive by there a lot. It's that parking lot's always full. It's amazing.
They overcame a rough patch. We should probably get back there. It's been a long time, and then the place across right across the street, that tavern there,
the pizza. It's another place I drive by all the time. And
haven't
think
been
of the
there
name.
In ages either.
Yeah, right on the corner. Yeah,
Tina and I have gotten into one. I won't call it a rut at all because I love it as ruts go. If we decide we want to go into town, it's to Saratoga instead of Albany or Troy. We go to Pinnell's. I just can't I'm sorry. I just I say to myself, I say, what do you want? She goes, do you want to go to here? Do you want to? No, let's go to Pinnell's. Which is so that's where we end up.
I'm the same way. My rule is I really don't want to go out and try things.
I get it.
Of, I'm not going to like it, and I'm going to be, you know, tears coming down my cheeks, and it's okay. So it's like I'm not adventurous either to begin with, but I like my favorites, and yeah.
Well, now that I know you like pot roast, and well, the best part of my response to the whole thing yesterday, because there was a big Tuesday hubbub yesterday in Horsey Twitter, and I put out, you know, just to sort of kind of poke fun, but got a wonderful response from several Carolina barbecue fans that cited my pot roast sandwich that Barry and I had the last several years of the barbecue, and people, the people really miss the barbecue, and they talked to, you know, my Italian beef that I crafted, and we had the Montreal smoked meat, you know, the last few years too, and
yeah,
we special, we had a very special 20 years doing that on track, so. Dick, I've got to pull up. We got to get Sid in here, and I got got a visit with Trey Styles coming, and then Seth Merrow, who, by the way, you want to talk about Ripe Tomato and that place across the street? That's in Seth's rotation.
Yeah, he doesn't live that far away. I mean, he's in that universe.
And I think the pot roast is his thing, actually. We'll find out in a couple of hours. Dick, okay. Thanks a lot. This was great.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Dick Powell, HKJC, everybody. And they're wrapped up, of course. And we just, in fact, let me look at the, as we go to the break, Sid's going to join us next. Let's see what this thing paid, because now the mutual should be up. It's been 15 minutes. And let's go. Wow, $23.20. $7.10 for Everyone's Delight, $5 for Total Power. Exacta paid $2.86 for $2. The 20-cent try paid $180. How about that? Nice. Very nice. $900 try. It was a good sequence to end, too. $891 pick three with a $14 winner and a $950 winner. That was tough. The Invisible Missile, though, was, I don't know, that was a little tough. I think that was a tough horse to come up with. Saturday night, Sunday morning, back at Shot 10. Back with Sid Fernando next. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. We'll look at the three-year-old winners from the weekend. And let's see what else. I got to get you a couple of notes about the sale, too. I hinted at it. I said I'd save it for Sid. Second half at the races after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping.